Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Few are chosen. Now, yes, that's true, but it's not the way that it sounds. When we think of chosen, we think literally of God sort of sitting up there doing an eeny, meeny, miny, mo, you know, I choose you, I don't choose you, you're good, you're not good. It's not like that. The chosenness comes from within, comes from that internal calling. Because the question becomes, well, chosen by whom? And the teaching of God is not a God who's sitting up there playing favorites. Not a God who says, I'll be one with you, but not one with you. Because we've been created, not just by the Creator, but of the Creator. That's what the whole spiritual tradition teaches us, is the creation itself is divine. Because it's been created out of the Creator like the wave out of the ocean. There is no distinction. And so it's not a matter of God saying, well, you are in my image, you are not. You are divine, you are not. It's not that. The chosenness is from within. My higher self, my true self, makes that choice. And it's a choice. In the Indian spiritual tradition, we're told that there are two paths of life. Prayas and Shreyas. And the path of Prayas is the path, more you could say, of passion. The path of eat, drink, and be merry. The path of, you know, he who dies with the most toys wins. That path of it's all about me. I'm going to step on people's heads to get ahead. It's just about pleasure. It's about what I want to do in the moment. And that path takes us, sure, we may acquire things, we may acquire sensory pleasures, but it doesn't take us far on a spiritual path. And it's the path that leads ultimately to suffering, because we have to keep learning the real lesson over and over and over again. And then there's the path of Shreyas, and that path is the path of the spiritual path, of the path of, as Pujya Swamiji says, filling the self, not filling the shelf. So that commitment to self rather than shelf, of knowing who I am, of embodying who I am, of living as who I am, rather than just acquiring things, rather than focusing on the material. And so that's the choice we make. When we say few are chosen, well, we have to realize we are the chooser. There's no concept in the Indian spiritual tradition of God with a wand that says, ah, you, and you, and you, but not the rest of you. Every single one of us is created from the same stuff. We all are waves of the same ocean. It's, are we going to listen to that inner call. And so that chosenness is up to us. And in every minute we have that choice. Every minute and every moment. And if you didn't choose it in the last moment, don't worry. It's a new moment right now. And that choice is there for all of us. Doesn't matter what you've done, doesn't matter what your past karma is. The scriptures are full of stories of people who have had a past history of not very spiritual actions, whether they're robbers, they're dacoits, they're this, they're that. And who have an awakening, have a moment in which it shifts. And suddenly, they choose themselves. We have to choose God. God is always there ready to choose us. That's why we've been born. We have to be prepared to choose. And the question is, do I want to focus? Because you can't walk down both paths simultaneously, and you can't walk with one foot in each path. Otherwise, it becomes like those really bad, you know, B comedies where the guy's standing on the dock and he's got one foot on the boat dock and one foot on the boat, and he's chatting with someone, and slowly the boat starts to go out to sea, and you can see the guy, and now he's straddling, and a foot's on the boat and a foot's on the dock, and now the boat's moving out into the ocean, and the guy ultimately, you know, splats in the ocean. It becomes like that. You can't have a foot in both paths simultaneously. And it doesn't mean that we can't enjoy life. It doesn't mean you have to renounce the things of the world. But it's about our focus. I can't be marching toward two different destinations simultaneously. So I have to choose. And if I choose God, then I'm chosen. And if I don't, that's okay. I have another chance next moment, another chance the moment after that, another chance next life. But I'm gonna keep coming back until I choose. Because only in that choosing am I actually able to clear my karma. Am I actually able to have the experience of oneness? And ultimately, that's what we take birth for. That's the whole point. We're not here to accumulate things or acquire things, whether it's possessions or degrees or relationships or whatever. We're here to awaken. So God says, whenever you're ready, but I have to choose. That chooser and choosee are both in me.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation.
I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
How do we deal with people in our immediate family who have grudges and anger and are responding, like I was saying, with that tool that's not right for the situation? Well, the first aspect is to really recognize this toolbox situation, because my pain, in most cases, my pain stems not so much from exactly what they do as from the fact that I feel like a victim of it. So it becomes, why me? And one of the examples that we use frequently is, we say, imagine that you're walking through a park and you get bit by a mad dog. Out of the bushes, a mad dog comes out and it bites you. Okay, so what are you going to do? You're going to go to the doctor, right? You're going to get the wound bandaged. You'll probably get a rabies shot, because the dog probably had rabies. But anybody going to chase the dog down the street to bite it back? Anybody going to need therapy to get over what a victim you feel like due to the fact that you were bit by the dog? Of course not, because we all understand the dog didn't wake up in the morning planning to bite me. The dog didn't, you know, watch my movements for a week and understand that, she goes for a morning walk every day, 6:30. I'm going to sit here and wait for her. It didn't get up early to be there to pounce on me. I just was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And we intuitively understand that. And so even though, yes, we need to get the wound bandaged, it doesn't create the psychological problem that when people in our family hurt us, it does. But the truth is that the same way that we understand the dog is actually the same way that we need to understand people in the world. Not that they're animals. I'm not saying they're dogs. I'm not saying they're animals. What I'm saying is that that which makes the dog bite is that it is sick. When we say mad dog, what that means is it has rabies. Otherwise, in general, dogs are really nice creatures. They only bite you if they feel threatened. But when the dog has an illness, a disease called rabies, it becomes mad. It bites. The same is true with people who hurt us. They're not doing it to us. They're not plotting and planning how to be miserable to us, how to harm us. They're diseased. They may not have an illness that's curable with an injection or a pill, but they're living in a state of dis-ease. They're upset. Their toolbox doesn't have love. Their toolbox doesn't have patience. Their toolbox doesn't have compassion. So in that state of dis-ease, what they've got in their toolbox is control, grudges, pain, fear. And that's how they respond to the world. Like what the dog has is rabies. And so when you really deeply, 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 deeply understand that, then it doesn't harm us psychologically as much, because we understand, they're just in a state of disease. It doesn't make it easier to deal with them. But we are not so injured psychologically. So it begins, but we have to have the understanding first. Yelling back at them, has it ever worked? They criticize you, you criticize them back. Does it work? Of course not. So when we know what doesn't work, we have to start looking at, well, what might work? Okay, so the first piece is understanding. Now, when we understand, it doesn't mean that we stick our leg out into that bush every day, knowing that there is a mad dog sitting there. It doesn't mean we allow ourselves to become victims, but it means that I don't react. I don't feel psychologically damaged based on it. Then I'm able to respond effectively. I'm able to understand what is the problem here. If someone is in our face, what you have to understand is they are miserable. People who are happy, they spread happiness. This is why we like to be around happy people. People who are in love, even if they're not in love with you, they're still really nice people to be around. When a friend of yours falls in love or a colleague falls in love, you can feel it. Even though you're not the one they're in love with, that love, it flows, it overflows. People in peace, they exude it. Pooja Swamiji always says, when you're in peace, you exude peace. You spread peace, you manifest peace. And then he says, and when you're in pieces, that's what you spread. You spread pieces, you share pieces. So if somebody's in your face, that's what they have inside. These air conditioners give cold air because that's what they have. Heaters blow hot air, it's what they have. Whether it's effective for that moment or not effective, it's all they have. The AC is effective in summer. It'll make us sick in the wintertime. But the AC can't help it because that's all it has. And so if what someone has is pain and anger, that's all they're going to give you. And it doesn't matter how much you yell at it. You can scream at that AC all you want. I'm getting pneumonia. Doesn't matter. It's just going to keep blowing its cold air. You can start coughing and sneezing. You can get a fever. You could drop dead in front of it. It's going to keep blowing its cold air. Because that's all it has. And the minute that you recognize that, doesn't make it easier, but it gives us distance from the reaction to the person as though they were doing it to me. I mean, it's like if someone really were sick. You go into the office one day, someone's come to work sick, they're coughing all over the place. Well, you don't want to stand near them. You know I'm going to catch whatever they've got. But you know they're not doing it to you. They didn't manufacture this virus to come in and give it to you. It's festering inside them. Get too close, you're going to get coughed on. And this is where, when people in our lives are like that, first thing we do is we understand. Second thing we do is we try to share as much love and as much peace as we possibly can. And we never give up. We never, ever, ever give up. Because if we give up, then we've let go of our own dharma, which is to share love and peace. I mean, that's who we are. If we recognize that we are the divine, if we recognize that we are the soul, that we are consciousness, then exuding that consciousness, exuding that divinity, that is our dharma. So when we give up, when we react, we're letting go of our dharma. There's that great story I love about the saint who's bathing in the river. And there's a scorpion that's flopping around, drowning in the river. And the saint goes to pick it up, to save it, to put it on the shore. And the scorpion stings him. And as the scorpion stings him, the saint goes, ow, and he flings his hand. And of course, the scorpion falls back in the water.
And then the saint goes to pick it back up again, and as he picks it up, it stings him before he can get it to the shore, and again he flings his hand, and again the scorpion falls in the water. And this drama goes on several times, with the saint continuing to try to lift the scorpion out of the water and put him on the riverbank. The scorpion keeps stinging him. He keeps flinging his hand. And some guy who's sitting on the edge of the river finally says, "Baba, chhodo usko. Let it go. It's a scorpion. He's going to keep stinging you. Forget it." And the saint says, "It's his dharma to sting. But it's my dharma to save. So if he's not leaving his dharma, why should I leave mine?" And so we don't give up. We don't react. We don't justify, well, he started it or she started it. But we also don't keep sticking our leg into the bush where we know the mad dog is. And so we figure out ways, even living within four walls, we figure out ways to protect ourselves. Not by reacting, not by biting back, but simply by effectively taking care of ourselves. Whether it's creating physical distance, whether it's creating emotional distance, but we don't do it out of anger. We don't lose our dharma. And should that person try to come toward us, with love, looking to change, we allow it to happen. We don't turn around and say, "Ah, for 30 years, who the hell are you now to come to me? I've been putting up with this for 30 years. We recognize that sometimes it takes 30 years for somebody to change, for them to recognize it. And we become, because we're not just energetic receivers, we're also energetic transmitters. And so where I've been energetically receiving this person's anger and grudge and pain and in-your-faceness, well, now I need to be an energetic transmitter of love and peace. But again, it doesn't mean that I walk into that person's psychic aura of anger. I don't metaphorically stick my leg into the bush where the dog is. But I stay present in my own dharma, in my own peace, in my own love, such that you never know. If you become enough of a magnet, enough of a transmitter, can change anything.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. Detachment is absolutely power, but we have to understand what detachment really means. Detachment is the English translation of the Sanskrit term vairagya. Okay? Now, vairagya is a great virtue. It's something that is extolled over and over again in the scriptures by the masters, that we must have vairagya. Now, the reason that I mention this is the problem with the translation is what you get is disconnection. And we start to think that being spiritual means to become disconnected. I shouldn't care. And this is where you get all of that, what I call real false spirituality. It's the look at how detached I am. Look at how disconnected I am. Let the world suffer and die. Let them go hungry. Let them be miserable. I'm detached. And then we feel good about ourselves for that because we convince ourselves that that is a spiritual way to live. The person in front of us trips and falls, and we say, oh, must be their karma. And we keep walking on our way. But there's no enlightened spiritual master I have ever heard of or been blessed enough to be near who isn't an ocean of compassion, who isn't an ocean of caring and connection and service. This is why the greatest service is being done by the masters. Because they care so deeply, they are so deeply connected that the hunger of the world, the thirst of the world, the pain of the world, the misery of the world is something they experience as their pain. And that's why they serve. They don't serve as separate. They don't serve as in, oh, I'm so great. They serve because the world is self. They're really seeing the divine through this third eye, seeing the divine in all, in the hungry, in the sick, in the miserable, in the trees, in the rivers, in the children. And so they serve. So now we get to this aspect of detachment. Well, okay, how do we understand these two seemingly conflicting aspects? Because vairagya is a very, very important and high virtue. Well, the way that I understood it was when I was listening to a beautiful saint speak about the scriptures and talk about how vairagya was actually the child, because in the scriptures, these virtues are personified. So vairagya is the offspring of bhakti. Now, bhakti is devotion. And in the scriptures is personified, actually. There is a character of bhakti. And bhakti gave birth to vairagya. Now, for me, that explained everything because bhakti is juicy devotion, not dry, disconnected, apathetic devotion, but juicy, rasa-filled devotion. Now, how can juicy love, juicy devotion give birth to apathy, detachment, disconnection? It didn't make sense to me. And this is when I realized that the English translation I don't think is correct. I think the way of understanding it is we begin with bhakti the mother, So we devote ourselves to the divine. Any name, any form, it doesn't matter what our religion is. It doesn't matter how we connect with God. But with deep love and deep devotion for the divine. When that happens, then we have what you could call reattachment. So instead of being attached to the things of this world, instead of being deeply attached to my car or my house or my clothes or my jewelry, I've become attached to the divine. And when I've become attached to the divine with such love and such juice, then naturally my attachment to the other things is going to dissipate. Because I've found something that is so much richer, so much fuller, so much deeper, so much more fulfilling than that which I was getting from looking at my car, from looking at the clothes in my closet, from buying jewelry after jewelry item. Nothing wrong with these things. But now I'm able to use them for what they are, not as objects of my attachment. And so when we reattach ourselves through bhakti to God, then we automatically end up with this vairagya. So instead of pushing ourselves away from the world, so it's not about I'm pushing away from you, I'm disconnecting from you. Instead of that, it's I'm connecting to the divine so deeply that I'm so filled with that joy, that ras, that love, that whether somebody is nice to me or not nice to me, or dances according to my tune or doesn't dance according to my tune, or brings me flowers and chocolates or doesn't bring me flowers and chocolates, it doesn't send me going up and down. It doesn't turn me from joyful to miserable, because I'm no longer hooked into those things. Instead of being connected to the waves on the ocean that go up and down on the surface, I'm connected to the depth. I'm connected to that which is eternal, that which is unchanging. And so that's where vairagya is power. But I would be careful about the word detachment, because detachment tends to too easily get co-opted into indifference and laziness and apathy. And that's not a virtue. The virtue is the reattachment to the divine that leads us actually into compassion and service for the world, and an automatic dissipation of my attachment to the things of the world, not because I've pushed them away, but because my hands have become so full of something richer and more meaningful and more fulfilling.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation. Since events in the life of human beings are believed to be preordained due to our karma and the need of the soul to evolve, where is the scope for the exercise of free will? My understanding over a period of time is that free will lies in our responses to the above. Please enlighten. So this balance between karma and free will and destiny, this is a common thread, and it's really important because when we're trying to figure out how to move through the world, when we're facing troubles, when we're having challenges, it's always important to know, of course, what to blame. I mean, is the problem in my stars? Is the problem in the feng shui or the vastu of my house? Is the problem in my decisions? Is the problem in my karma? Because only if we know where the problem lies are we going to be able to figure out how to address it. So there's a couple of different ways of understanding this. And actually what it really is it's all of the above, but they're all intertwined. It's not that one takes precedence. So here's what it looks like. The karma that we have come into this moment with is the sum total of that which has happened in the past. Our past lives, if you believe in our past incarnations. If you don't subscribe to the belief in reincarnation, you can just say that which has happened earlier in this life. The direct choices that we've made, and the indirect choices that we've made. So, for example, which family we took birth in. Well, that creates a lot of situations for variables. Were we born into money? Were we not born into money? Were we born into a family where we got a good education? Were we not? Were we born into a family with certain values? Were we not? Well, that sets the stage for a lot of where our life goes. But all of that, from this moment, we're going to relegate to what we're going to call our past karma. Because from this moment, it's all past. What brought me into that family? What happened in past lives? The journey my soul was on before I was born? This is the stuff that's interesting and fascinating in more of an intellectual type of inquiry. But what Pooja Swamiji reminds us of over and over and over again and emphasizes over and over again, before we start looking at the fascinating aspects of where we might have been in a previous life, what brought me into this world, this family, this religion, this culture, and this life, we have to first understand how to move through today. So many people come in with, well, how do I know what my past lives were? How do I access past lives? And he always says, first figure out how to manage this one. When you've got this one under control, then we can start looking at where you were before. So what we're going to do, just for the sake of how we can benefit and move forward on our path, is we're going to call all of that past karma. Due to my soul's journey, due to the karma, I was born in this family, that which happened in past lives. I was born in this family. I was given this history, given this background. All of that, everything up until this moment, has brought me here. Now, what we know is
that where we are today is a product of what we have done in the past. If you have an orange tree today or an apple tree today, it's because at some point in your past you've planted an apple seed or an orange seed, or you've permitted someone to plant an apple or orange seed in your garden. Otherwise, you wouldn't have the tree in your garden today. Basic science. But what's important is there's no value judgment in the universe. So the universe does not say apple trees are good or apple trees are bad or orange trees are good or orange trees are bad. There's no sense of bad karma, bad action, good action. We think of it like that. With the law of karma, it's just science. Plant an orange seed, get an orange tree. Neither good nor bad. In the same way, I plant seeds of connection, seeds of spiritual growth, seeds of generosity, seeds of oneness, seeds of the world as a family, seeds of service. Well, those are the trees that are going to grow in my garden. On the other hand, if I plant seeds of separation, seeds of meanness, selfishness, well, those are the trees that are going to grow in my garden. Again, the universe doesn't put labels. It doesn't say this is good, this is bad. But what we know is some of those trees cause us to suffer, or rather the fruit of those trees. The fruit of some of those trees is very, very sweet. So the fruit of trees of love, trees of connection, trees of peace, of joy, of oneness, of spiritual opening. This is fruit that's very sweet to eat. And the fruit of the trees of separation, of competition, of illusion, of ignorance, of selfishness. Sure, I may end up with all the trees in the neighborhood in my garden. Stolen everybody's seeds, stolen everybody's soil, stolen everybody's water and sunshine. I've got all the trees in my garden. But that fruit is going to be very bitter because it's the fruit of separation, the fruit of competition, the fruit of loneliness. So those are labels we put on them. Love feels good, loneliness doesn't. Connection feels good, separation doesn't. Giving feels good, serving feels good, connection feels good. But the universe, this law of karma, is just, it's science. Whatever I've planted, that's what I've got. But where I'm going tomorrow is due to what I'm planting today. So where I am today is due to that which I've planted in the past, or that which I've permitted to be planted in the garden of my life. But where I'm going tomorrow is due to what I plant today. And this is where that free will comes in. You can't change the present moment. You can't be in Belize right now. At this moment, right here, everything in your past is what has brought you to this moment. We're here. We're in satsang. This is the fruit of the seeds you've planted. Even if you think it was random, it was just serendipity, a beautiful coincidence. But this is karma coming into play. Where you're going to be an hour from now, a week from now, a year from now, that's up to you. And this is where the second part of the question came in terms of the soul needing to evolve. Now, the first part about that is the soul doesn't evolve. The soul doesn't even go on a journey. I mean, these are terms we use just for the ease of speaking, the ease of understanding. But the soul has no birth. The soul doesn't die. The soul is what's one. The soul is what Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita explains to us cannot be burned by fire, cannot be dried by the wind, cannot be cut with a knife, cannot be wet with water. The soul is that which is eternal. And the whole concept even of souls in the plural is again just something that we use for the ease of description. But the highest truth is it's just soul. All of these individual forms are like waves on the ocean. Thich Nhat Hanh, the beautiful, beautiful Buddhist sage, said, enlightenment is when the wave realizes it's the ocean. So there's waves in plural, but ocean, singular. And that's really the way to understand it, is when we see a wave, well, is it the wave or is it the ocean? On the most superficial layer, at this particular intersection of time and space, there is a wave. But 30 seconds ago, there was no wave. 30 seconds from now, there will be no wave. And interestingly, even in that wave, it's changing every instant. The molecules of water in the wave are changing as it moves, changing as it grows, changing as it comes closer to shore, changing as it crashes, changing as it recedes. There's no thing called wave. It's just a movement of the ocean. And that's what we all are, is waves of that ocean. In this intersection of time and space, there's ocean in the form over here is me. There's ocean in the form over there is you. Ocean in the form over there is you. But really, it's ocean. And so the soul doesn't evolve. The soul doesn't go anywhere. The soul doesn't long for something other than for its highest expression. What the soul longs for, if you could say that the soul had a longing, is just to be able to express itself in the most infinite nature of its reality. The soul is boundless. It's ocean. If you could imagine the ocean as infinite, if there were no California, there were no Japan, there were no England, there were no Europe, so we had no shores of oceans, but just ocean. That's what the soul is. And so the soul is infinite. But when we identify as the form, when we identify as the wave, then in our perception, we have bounded up the soul. We've said, this is who I am. I am the body. I am all of that aspects, my career, my financial state, my age, my relationships, my beauty. In that ignorance, we're suffocating the expression of the soul. Not the soul itself. The soul, of course, is unsuffocatable. But the soul is not able to express itself in its infinite nature. Because my mind has identified with the body. So the way I'm living, the way I'm moving through the world is identified with the mind, me, mine, separation, judgment, jealousy, competition, fear, greed. And the soul is just trying to return back to its infinite nature. Like the ocean pulls back the wave and subsumes it back into the ocean. And so as we take birth after birth after birth, we do this just until the mind is able to have the understanding, the experience, the knowledge that it is soul, and to stop identifying with the body, to stop living in ignorance, to stop drawing lines and borders and boundaries, to stop focusing on the physical being, to stop thinking I'm the doer, and to recognize emotion. And so as we move through the world, when we make choices of what seeds we're going to plant, that's what's in our free will. Is, am I going to plant seeds of greater awakening, greater expression of the infiniteness of who I am? Or am I going to plant seeds of confinement to this body? Am I going to focus my life and my energy and my consciousness and my awareness on dressing up the body, decorating the body, acquiring things for the body, whether they're names and titles or relationships or career or material possessions, focusing on the comfort of the body and forgetting about who I really am? Or am I going to focus on expression of the soul, so that I can live my highest truth? So rather than evolving, it's more of a peeling back of the layers. You can think of it of like an onion with the layers that just get peeled back and back, and at the end you're left with nothing. It's what the Hindus call everythingness. It's what the Buddhists call nothingness. But it's the same. Is that awareness, as Thich Nhat Hanh said, when the wave realizes it's the ocean. And our karma is that which is taking us into situations to help us peel back our layers. And that's up to us. When we're in a situation, how do we utilize that situation? Do we get frustrated? Do we get annoyed? Do we say, why me? Why always me? Or do we utilize that situation, understanding it's been given to me to take my next step, to peel back my next layer, to get freer? And that's up to us. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.